Across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
On FM, digital and your mobile.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
I'm going to read you the menu. It's fantastic.
So we get better flavour because of the Fenn soil.
I've drunk more beer since I came here and bought my two barrels than I've ever done in my life before, I think.
I shouldn't have said almonds. They don't make it from almonds.
So you've got this big sticky mess when you start off.
Pizza pot pints.
My wife's cakes are selling up hot cakes. Brilliant, thank you.
The time is right for this sort of thing.
Food is everything.
Cambridge is right for this sort of thing.
What's it like? Delicious.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour on Cambridge 105 Radio, bringing you news and stories of food and drink here in Cambridge and thereabouts. I'm Matt Bentman and we're live in the studio today with Alan Alder. And what's on the lineup today, Alan?
Well, coming up on the 29th of May is National Biscuit Day. So I've been talking to Rosie Sykes about biscuits and her Friday Biscuit Instagram feature, which she has recently started up again.
And although Sue Bailey can't be with us today, she has been busy talking with the founders of Kale and Damson and finding out about their impressive history.
Matt visits a couple of Cambridge allotment growers to find out what they're growing and what's on the way.
We also have our usual big helping of Cambridge food and drink news too. What food is available for free? And at the end of the programme, our jobs roundup.
And we may just be able to squeeze in some wild food sampling too, if I can get a moment to delve into Mill Road Cemetery's undergrowth for a spot of foraging.
Yeah, just as long as it isn't woodlice again.
We'll see.
Yeah, we will wait and see. But in the meantime, let's kick off with a local company that in the early 80s had a shop in Green Street, and at some stage, a market stall on Cambridge Market, and it then began supplying restaurants such as Pizza Express and Wagamama, before reverting to supplying more local outlets. It's Kale and Damson. Now, they're sponsoring two of the awards in the Velvet Food and Drink Awards. Sue Bailey asked them about that, but first, about how they started in the food business. We hear from founder Kamal Dariwal and then from his son Kuljit.
We started in the early 80s with a greengrocer's shop on Regent Street, selling fresh fruit and veg, a deli counter and a good selection of wines. We did that for the first 10 years. Then in the early 90s, we sold up the shop and moved into food service, supplying restaurants, hotels, colleges, Pizza Express and other brands like that that were building up at the time. 2002, we sold up that side of the business and moved into a brand new warehouse in St. Neots. 2005, my son joined from uni. And then 2007, we sold the whole lot to a big national company, which took us into the realms of sort of supplying fresh produce all over the UK, supplying places like Dubai and Hong Kong. Then in 2014, 7 years later, we decided, Kuljit decided he wanted to sort of start again and do it all on his own basis. And I joined him, I think, fairly quick after that. So we've had Kale and Damson now since 2014. So we're about to celebrate our 10th birthday in July. Yeah. So I'll pass you over to Kuljit now.
We did learn a lot in that process because of the growth that we experienced. So, you know, we were supplying the likes of, on a national basis, brands like Wagamama, Rail Gourmet, but then we're also doing food halls like Harrods Food Hall and Selfridge's restaurants. And we're also doing the retail element of Whole Foods and supplying the Emirates Stadium and Wembley and so forth. So it gave us a lot of exposure within the industry up and down the country as well. But when it was gearing up for their sale, privately held business, I can sense in that latter 3 years that, you know, it suddenly became more political. It wasn't quite tying up with my values about, you know, sort of providing quality service. That sort of led. It was more about the numbers, which I get, and I fully understood, and it was the right path for that business at that time, but just wasn't tying in with me. And so that's where I decided to take the leap in 2014, incorporate Kale and Damson, and that was to basically do it, keep to my ethos, which is quality service-led style business at the right value. And then we obviously got one van, this small unit, and kitted it out with a cold room with about three customers and thought, oh my God, what have we done? I spent all this money and we've only got, you know, and it was a gradual growth. But we had 2 years of like what I'd say, you know, the sort of startup era where, you know, we've invested in it, waited for our return to come back. But that's gone in that right direction. And then pandemic came on later on, which strangely, as stressful as that time was, we actually flourished on that moment by doing home deliveries. So that actually kept our supply chains open and we kept active. We came out of the pandemic twice the size, which is very fortunate. Not many businesses can say that, especially for this kind of work. And I think that is partly due to the fact that we stayed open with doing home deliveries and our supply chains open. So that allowed other business customers to go, we need a supplier. You're open. Can we work yourselves? And that's how we've essentially doubled the size of the business. And then we obviously have a very, very strong presence in Cambridge, given where we're based here in Papworth and growing up in Cambridge ourselves. And then we go all the way down to sort of London, up to Nottingham, as far west as Milton Keynes, and we cover East Anglia. And, you know, our main focus is fruit, vegetables, cheese, dairy, charcuterie, and so forth. Anything chilled with good quality mindsets with it, really.
I didn't realise that you had such a widespread. I was thinking Kale and Dams and just on the fruit and veg side, but it's interesting that you do the whole...
Yes.
Spread.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what we're seeing in the marketplace now, you know, everybody's under cost pressure. I think what I'm seeing with some of the wise ones are looking at consolidation sensibly, not putting everything together. So what we see ourselves as a strong chilled distributor. So, you know, yes, we do a bit of frozen, but it's probably more troubleshooting frozen to get the chef out of trouble if they haven't got any frozen peas or something like that. So it's just a very small amount. But what we are seeing in the marketplace is that some of the wiser buyers and people, customers are consolidating. So they're going, actually, you know, we want a supplier to do our fruit, veg, our cheese, our dairy, and so on, rather than having 3-4 different suppliers coming in with 3-4 different vehicles. And it's also a sustainable thing as well. Days of, you know, and I even recognise this, the days of just going around delivering fruit and veg are way gone. And that was even 20 years ago. And I think it's driven so more now. So we recognise that we've got to become more. We're not just a fruit and veg greengrocer grocery business. Yes, that's our passion. Yes, we're very good at it, but we're also a distribution business. So we see the value in that, and our customers see the value in that as well. So that's where we're looking to grow that business. We've got the wheels. The wheels are going to the same destinations. It's about what more we can put on that vehicle that can help our customers with their offering.
Can I just ask, is it mainly sort of restaurants and, if you like, the trade side of things? What are the typical type of customer that you have, or the range of customers that you have?
We'd probably focus on hotels, restaurants, pubs, gastropubs, good eateries. We also have fine dining and Michelin star customers as well, but we try to do a balance of all, but keeping a maintained balance and making sure we get those customers who value the quality and the service as well. And I think the big thing is staying consistent, and I think that's the same in every business.
Let's move on now to the Velvet Awards, and you're sponsoring both the restaurant and the chef category, I gather, yeah. And the votes are in. Yeah. So any comments on that, if you're allowed to say anything?
I think it's a hard one this year because we've got so many good places to go and eat. You know, you've got sort of the likes of Midsummer House, Restaurant 22, the Frantic guys are doing a tremendous job. Then you've got Providence out there. And that's just sort of mentioning a few restaurants. You've got Green Man at Grantchester. So I think we've got lots of exceptionally good restaurants, gastropubs that are coming up. And I think it's going to be a difficult one. And I don't feel the judges are going to have an easy job. Yeah. The chefs as well are going to be an interesting one. Because I think we've got some very new, young, talented chefs coming up. So I'm curious to see. I mean, who do I think is going to win? Well, let's wait and see.
I'm judging the food and drink hero, and that's going to be an interesting one too. Shame I'm not doing the restaurant one, though. I wouldn't mind doing all the dining side of things, but it's a good chance. As you say, we're very lucky in Cambridge to actually have a good range of good quality restaurants that aren't bonkersly expensive, thank goodness.
And I think that's something to be grateful for, the Cambridge economy that we have as well. Yes, Cambridge is a bubble, but I think we're very fortunate to have that bubble. You know, we can get into London, you see a different demographic and different culture. But I think it's nice, the balance that we have here and the economy.
And just to finish off, I love the name Kale and Damson. Whose idea was that?
Well, I'm going to give the credit to Kamal on that one. So do you want to explain your narrative on that?
So it was a lunch in what used to be one of my favourite restaurants, the Three Horseshoes at Madingley, when Richard Stokes had it, who's now at Finboy's, which is another good restaurant. So what happened was my starter came out and there was purple potatoes and I'm trying to think what the other thing was. Green peas. I thought the two colours looked really good. But I thought you can't call a business peas and potatoes. It doesn't quite sound right. So I started thinking of what other produce there was. So green became kale, and then damson was the damson and the fruit. And then I realised it's also our initials, and it's also got damn sun in it, which all coincides. Why I put an and in the middle of it, I don't know. When Richard came out with the main course, I said, what do you reckon to kale and damson? And he went, it sounds like a firm of stuffy lawyers that's been around for 100 years. I said, what do you reckon? And he goes, great name. And it's brought up so many conversations wherever we go. So we're really pleased with the name.
I think it's a perfect name and describes exactly what you do, because you don't just do the standard. You do something that goes above and beyond, and that's, I think, really brilliant.
Thank you.
Anyway, thank you so much.
No, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming over today. And good luck with all the winners and people that are in the competition.
Indeed. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that's an inspired name, Kale and Damson. Thanks to Kamal and Kuljit. And now details of free food available in and around Cambridge. The information about what's available and where to get it comes from the Olio app, which exists so that people's or businesses' surplus food doesn't go to waste.
Yeah, that's right. And today's look at Olio for Cambridge shows us that Jing on Hills Road has tiger batons, a white baton and a white baguette to give away. Tim near Comberton has a pack of cheese scone mix. Ivy near Orchard Park has a packet of gravy sauce, some Chinese black bean sauce and a tin of Danish ham available. Beta near Coldham's Lane next to the Beehive Centre has 5 Warburton's loaves going spare. And yeah, that's pretty much it, really. Again, Saturday morning Olio may not necessarily be the most representative day for showing you all the great things that are available on Olio. It can be perhaps much more lively during the weekdays, especially when people collect a job lot of items from a shop like Pret-a-Manger, who need to get rid of their stuff at the end of the day. So you can end up with a mountain of sandwiches, rolls, baguettes, wraps, salads and soups all piled onto Olio, and they have to go that evening, you know? And the Olio app can also send you an automatic alert when that happens, which will give you the best chance of getting what you want. And one other thing, Olio not just does food, but it's also really good for picking up kitchen items, because people find it hard, I think, to sell kitchen items because of the weight and the cost involved in postage and packing, whether it's selling stuff on eBay or whatever. But here you can pick up stuff locally at really good prices. I think I mentioned recently that I picked up a Bialetti mocha pot.
Yes, you did. Yeah, yes. I was going to ask you a bit more about it, actually.
Yeah, it was a fiver and it was brand new. But people are also selling things. Well, you know, we're a very transient town. We tend to be. So people, they need to shift this stuff quite quickly. You can pick up food processors, blenders, loads of them, all for knockdown prices, quite often only very little used. And close to you as well.
Well, that's really worth knowing. How have you found the mocha pot? How's your sort of coffee experience changed as a result of it?
Quite interesting, really. I think, that I've been doing it wrong all these years. So I used to have an old Italian mocha pot that I lost because I lent it to someone. I started looking on YouTube when I bought this Bialetti mocha pot, and there are so many videos that try and show you the correct way to do a proper Italian espresso. So I found that I was doing it in the wrong sequence. And they're very careful about things like, you know, make sure you preheat the water before you put it into the bottom tank. Make sure that you then only heat it on a mild heat. Don't put it on a boiling heat, say like the maximum on your oven. And then it just has to very slowly bleed out of the top. Right, you know, if it starts spitting, then there's every chance that you're going to get a bitter cup of coffee. And also, you leave the lid open so that you can watch it.
Right.
Which I never used to do. I just used to listen for the spitting sound.
Yes, I've never left the lid open. I've not often used them, actually. But what's the coffee like? Has doing it properly made a difference?
I'd like to think it has. But the problem is, it's been so many years since my last pot that I don't necessarily remember. Right. But I appreciate what they're trying to teach me. But I did have an authentic Italian come round, watch me doing this, and they just looked at me incredulously. What are you thinking? That's not how you do a proper coffee. I said, this is how the experts allegedly do it. So they were very dubious. But I made them a coffee, and they just stayed silent.
Oh, right. So you rested your case.
Perhaps.
As they say. Yeah. Anyway, all of that is from the Olio app, and there's another free app called Too Good To Go, which has unsold food from restaurants, cafes and shops, often at less than half price. And rather than specifying each unsold item, because they haven't got time, the surplus food is simply put into a magic bag, ready for you to take home. And that saves it from being binned at the end of the day's trading. And regular donors to this scheme include Marks & Spencer at Cambridge Station, Greggs in Cherry Hinton, Nines Global Buffet, Namaste, Aldi in Histon Road, Pret, Upper Crust at the station, the Co-op in Sawston, Al Pomodoro, Hotel Duvan, various others. So that also is very well worth checking out.
Good, good. OK, on to our first news section now, and we begin with restaurant news. And there is a wine and pizza tasting on the 21st of May at Scots All Day in Mill Road, featuring five wines from around the world supplied by the excellent Thorn Wines, and they come with matched pizza slices. Now, this runs from 5.30 to 8.30, and the cost is £47.50.
On the 23rd of May, Hidden by Pudini has a pasta night in Willingham.
Molino Handmade Pasta is at the Wine Rooms in Hills Road on Sunday the 2nd of June with six courses, including canapés and pasta. Cost for that is £59.
Not in Cambridge, in London, but it is a local chef, Rosie Sykes. She has a pop-up just off Tottenham Court Road on the 3rd of June. And here is Rosie with some details.
Well, I'm hoping in the autumn that I will pop up in Cambridge. But yes, indeed, Honey & Co. have a new shop. It's actually just off the Tottenham Court Road and it's called Honey & Co. Daily. And they have a little dining room there and they invited me. They do a supper club series, often with people with books, and they've invited me to go along. So it's a three-course dinner with a little starter treat when you arrive. And it is all recipes from the book. So the starter is a salad which has a lovely fig leaf and almond dressing. The main course is spiced meatballs with barley couscous, which is very much in keeping with Honey & Co. I hope it's not a bit too cold to Newcastle, but it is a really popular recipe from my book. Mm-hmm. And then the pudding is a chocolate coconut, almost slightly schooly thing, which is so delicious and gluten and dairy free.
And I hear it's close to selling out or it has sold out.
Yeah, it's pretty much sold out as far as I know. There's a waiting list and people do often drop out. So it's worth getting on the waiting list if you're keen.
Meanwhile, the Clarendon Arms in Clarendon Street has reopened. It's now under new management and it's continuing to be a place to eat because you can get their very well-regarded Sunday roast there.
Yeah, and other things too, I think. Mm. There's a Gutter and Stars wine night at Finn Boys in Mill Road on the 6th of June.
The next Caxton Farmers Market is on the 9th of June.
And Velvet Magazine's shortlist for its Food and Drink Awards has been decided on votes by the public. And here are the ones that have made it through. The Tea Room and Coffee Shop finalists are Cafe at Highgate in Willingham, Little Piggy in Fenstanton and Page's Coffee House in Cambridge.
Finalists in the Farm Shop and Deli section include Morgan's Butchery in Baythorn End, Flourish Farm Shop in Hildesham and Meadows in Cambridge.
Producer of the Year finalists are Fiona's Patisserie in Ely, Patron's Table in Cambridge and Sourdough Hub in Newmarket.
Shortlisted for the Pub and Bar Award are Northstow Tap and Social, the Bell Inn in Rickingall and the Champion of the Thames in Cambridge.
It's amazing how quickly Northstow Tap and Social has taken off. It's hardly been open a month and it's already a finalist in these awards. A much needed place. Restaurant of the Year shortlist is Restaurant 22, Van der Lyle and Caboo, all in Cambridge.
Chef of the Year finalists include James Kahn at Lark in Bury St Edmunds, Alex Harris of Pudini in Willingham and Dan Fancett of Fancett's in Cambridge.
Lark in Bury St Edmunds was Jay Rayner's Restaurant of the Year last year. It's in a converted sort of bus stop place. Ah. It's rather small. The Hospitality Hero Award, Midgar Coffee in Bury St Edmunds, Ben's Yard in Ely, Downhall Hotel and Spa in Bishop Stortford.
The Sustainability Hero Award, Alchemy Distillery in Bury St Edmunds, Sunshine and Green in Sudbury and Cambridge Organic.
Equality Hero, Cambridge Community Kitchen, Abbey People and the Edge Cafe, all in Cambridge.
And on the Community Hero shortlist are Still Good Friends in Bury St Edmunds, Diamond Hampers of St Neots, and Neil Baradwa from the Cambridge Fruit Company, who was in our last episode.
And finally, shortlisted for Food and Drink Hero are Ben Hitton, Bury St Edmunds, Charlotte Gidden, Bury St Edmunds, and Tim Hayward, Cambridge. So congratulations to all of them. The winners will be revealed on the 10th of June.
Yeah, and on the subject of awards, Bea Wilson is a finalist in the General Cookbook Award from the Guild of Food Writers. And Tim Hayward from Fitzbillies in Trumpington Street, he's a finalist in the food writing section for his work in the Financial Times, and also for the Food Podcast or Broadcast Award for his FT Food Revolution podcast. So that's our news for now. More later.
On the 29th of May, it's National Biscuit Day, and we've not celebrated this day on Flavour before by some gross oversight, so it's high time we did. Apparently, in Britain, we eat 52 biscuits per second, and the most popular are chocolate digestives, followed by chocolate hobnobs, then jammy dodgers, custard creams, shortbread, bourbons, and Jaffa cakes, which actually, I think, isn't that legally designated a cake now?
I think so.
And I asked a few people at Cambridge Market what their favourite biscuit is and got some rather surprising answers. And here they are, starting with Tracy from Emerald Foods and then fruit and veg man Chris from opposite the Louisiana chicken shop called Popeyes and then some of his customers. Tracy, what's your favourite biscuit?
I don't really eat biscuits.
Oh, you don't like them?
Well, I do like them, but they don't like me.
Bad luck. Chris, have you got a favourite biscuit?
Many favourite biscuits, but probably the best one is chocolate digestives, but milk chocolate, not plain.
Oh, why is that? Why not plain?
No, plain is nasty, dark chocolate. Why make something as lovely as chocolate and then make it bitter?
Oh, well, good with coffee, though.
I stick to tea. Better for Dunkin'.
My favourite biscuit would be, what are they calling things? Milk...
I ain't got a clue. I
know what they look like, but I don't know what they call them.
But they're chocolates, are they?
No. We don't have chocolate biscuits.
We're both diabetics.
We're both diabetic.
I have rich tea, I do.
Right, and that's your favourite?
Not really, but I have to have rich tea.
The other ones we have are... What are those block ones?
Yeah, I don't know. Milk something, aren't they?
Yeah, milk something. I'd have to look it up. I just eat them.
Yes.
They're nice.
Thank you.
Have you remembered?
Yes, a shortbread.
Oh, shortbread. Oh, they're delicious.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah,
make my hair curl.
Mine too. Local chef Rosie Sykes started a Friday biscuit recipe on her Instagram pages over lockdown and has recently restarted it, and she's the obvious person to talk to about biscuits.
Rosie, what do you think makes a good biscuit?
I think that they need a good bit of crunch, but also some softness. So although I absolutely love... you know, your classics like a digestive or a rich tea. I love these, especially for a little dunk, which is a controversial thing. But if I'm looking for kind of a real, I would call those utility biscuits. But if I'm looking for more of a treat, I love that sort of softness that you get from a bit of honey or syrup or, you know, like a Florentine or a lovely kind of oaty biscuit with fruit and nuts in it. Just a little bit of softness, which some might contribute to calling a biscuit a cookie, which, yes, again, another controversial area, Alan.
Indeed, yes. Well, I always think of the sort of the slightly soft ones. Well, they're sold as cookies generally, aren't they?
Yes,
yeah. Bigger than your average biscuit as well. Can you see a trend in biscuits? People are sort of moving away from sweeter things, I think. Is that
Yeah, I think you might be right about that, Alan. And the thing is, they're often... a lot of people are interested in lower gluten. A lot of people are interested in ancient grains. But all those things are very possible in a biscuit. And I actually think savoury biscuits are super delicious. You know, one of the first biscuits that I put into my Friday biscuit was a little cheese sablé, which, again, you know, you could take that on your picnic or your whatever you're doing. It's very portable and utterly, utterly delicious. So they serve a different purpose, a savoury biscuit, I think. You often have them as a little amuse-bouche or a canapé or something like that. Or we're talking different forms of crackers, I suppose. So more a vehicle-type biscuit. But there is quite a trend for, you know, biscuits to have with cheese that have fruit and nuts in them, which are really delicious to eat on their own. And in fact, I've just sort of invented a recipe from something that I've seen, which is a sort of rye, almost like a rye bread. You bake it as a little loaf, and I put it full of seeds and fruit, and then slice it really thinly and dry it out on a tray in a low oven. And it makes these lovely little thin biscuits, which you could eat at any time, really, because they've got a little bit of honey in them, and they're really great. So, but on the other hand, if you ever look at biscuit recipes, no one's cutting the sugar in biscuit recipes because, you know, from a, and I'm not a scientist at all, but from a kind of composition point of view, you really need that amount of sugar, that amount of syrup, that amount of butter to make the right consistency.
You've been doing, I think it was over lockdown, wasn't it? You started doing on Instagram a Friday biscuit, and you've recently restarted. Has there been any runaway successes where you've had lots of comments?
Well, yes. I mean, it's really nice to see how happy people are to see it come back, actually. And we're still in the early days, and we're going to create a few more and revisit a lot of them. It all started because a great friend of mine who I used to go on walks with during lockdown gave me a book called the WI Book of Biscuits. And I renamed it the Book of Bix. And I spent a lot of time looking at the Book of Bix. And whenever we went on walks, we'd talk about biscuits and often swap biscuits. And so one of the most popular biscuits actually is one that Lucy, my friend, who created who came up with the idea for the Friday biscuit after our walks together. She's in marketing, so she's very smart. But she created a biscuit which I renamed Biscotti di Tutti because it is a home for all the little bits of your little packets of dried fruit that are left, or a nut or two, or some oats, or some other cereal, or all sorts of things are thrown into this biscuit. But its main component is oats. So it sort of feels quite healthy, totally delicious, really lovely. And that has had a lot of likes and yeah, definitely. And then last week I did one called a Hermit, which was is an American biscuit, which was very popular as well.
Right, okay. Could you give us a couple of ideas for biscuits then, a couple of recipes?
Yeah, sure. So one of the biscuits, I quite like a sandwich biscuit. So, you know, that's got a delicious filling in it. And there's one that I do, which is chocolate, a chocolate biscuit. And then you make a sort of Horlicks Ovaltine malted buttery center to go in the middle of that. That one's really delicious. I've got an olive oil biscuit, which is also in my book, which is great because it's vegan. So, and I put chocolate chips in that, but it's very simple. Instead of the fat you use is olive oil, and it's got fennel seeds and orange zest, and it's really lovely.
And that's in your new book, Every Last
In
Part.
My newest yeah, book, yeah. Yes. Yeah. And then what else is a really lovely biscuit? Well, a Florentine. You know, I think one of the best things that Fitzbillies does is a Florentine. I mean, that is a winner for me, that biscuit. So I'm hoping to do some little collaborations with different people, in brackets, not Fitzbillies, to find more new, interesting biscuits as well. So I think
when you say find them, You don't mean invent them, you mean
ones that I don't necessarily know about. Yeah, I think that would be quite fun and interesting. And actually, my end goal now, Alan, is to try and turn the Friday biscuit into a book.
Oh.
But not a book as we know it, a sort of more like a zine or something, something kind of much more accessible to people, but also really beautiful. So I want to work with some artists who will draw pictures. So it won't have photographs, probably. It will be much more a kind of arty project with lots of interesting biscuits.
Well, that's something to look forward to. I didn't ask you what your favourite biscuit is, Matt.
Garibaldi.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was surprised nobody mentioned that in the markets or anything.
No.
But I would like to add normal digestive biscuits because you can put cheese on them.
Yeah,
either like
actually,
cheddar or soft
cheese. Digestive biscuits go very well with some cheeses, don't they?
They are beautiful.
Yeah,
like that.
I agree with you. Yeah. Mm. Anyway, we're off for a break now, but unfortunately we have no biscuits. But we will go for a quick forage in the Mill Road Cemetery. Back in 2 minutes.
Cambridge 105 Radio. New Music Generator is the programme where we champion the local music scene. On Wednesdays and Saturdays, Tim Willett and Rebecca May have the latest releases, studio interviews and live sessions.
The message came through saying, oh, we've listened to your track. And I was like, oh, I've had that before, it's fine, it's nothing. And then I got a DM from Rebecca on Insta and I was like, oh, okay, that's going to get played.
New Music Generator online at cambridge105.co.uk, Wednesdays at 7 and Saturdays at 4 on Cambridge 105 Radio.
On Saturday the 15th of June, listen to the sound of brass as the Littleport Band perform in the timeless setting of Ely Cathedral. You'll hear jazz, big band, classical and traditional brass band, and featuring international trumpet virtuoso Mike Lovett, whose work includes Harry Potter, James Bond and many of the Marvel movies. Littleport Band at Ely Cathedral on Saturday the 15th of June. Tickets are just £10 and under 10s are free. To book, visit elycathedral.org.
We're live and local
all day long.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Welcome back to Flavour. Now, Alan has returned from his foraging expedition. He's been making a drink from what he's found. So,
This drink's probably too hot to drink, actually, Matt. So,
righto.
So, however.
Yeah, I've just been to the Mill Road Cemetery, which is just has an abundance of good things to eat. That sounds a bit bizarre, doesn't it, really? But this tea I've just made, I just made some nettle tea, but I think it's a bit too hot to drink at the moment. So, however, I did get some elderflowers. And in, I think it's Food for Free by Richard Mabey, he talks about eating elderflowers, just eating them off the tree on a hot day as you're walking along and you come across an elderflower bush, just eat the flowers. So shall we eat them?
Okay, right. Here goes.
Biting in now.
Yeah.
Well, I hate to say this, but they could do with a bit of sugar on them.
And chocolate and biscuits and cheese.
He says they taste like cream soda. I don't know if they still make that awful drink, cream soda, but to me they do not taste like cream soda. However, on my way in this morning, I couldn't resist picking some Jack by the Hedge, which I've given you some of.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to try that?
I will. Ah, that's more pleasant.
Strong tasting, isn't it?
I was expecting something a little bit aniseedy, but I don't think I can describe it as that.
People describe it as being mustardy.
Mustardy, that's more appropriate.
And, you know, a few leaves like this in a salad would be a mustardy experience, wouldn't they? Now, we made this a few years ago, this nettle tea. I just picked some nettles, and you have to have ones, I think, which are not in flower yet. I think once the nettles start flowering, I think they're a bit old. But in Cambridge, there's a mixture of nettles at the moment. The ones in the Mill Road Cemetery that I just went to were not in flower, but they are in plenty of places. And anyway, I've just added boiling water to it. It's become a sort of slightly light green colour, the fluid, and we'll drink it.
Okay.
Actually, after the Jack by the Hedge.
it's very mild, though. It's really pleasant. I like that. I've always liked it. I've liked it from the first time you brought it in.
Yeah, that was a long time ago, yeah. Wasn't it? Yeah. But it does have a very nice, gentle flavour.
It's pleasant, smooth, really nice and smooth.
Right. OK, so we couldn't resist that because there's just lots of lovely things to eat for nothing at the moment.
I think the nettles is well worth trying for anyone who's interested. Makes a nice drink.
Yeah, it does.
OK, on to some more food news now. We're going to start with the foraging chef, Steve Thompson, because he has a charity fundraiser at Island Hall in Godmanchester for the Riding for the Disabled Association. Now, this is on the 14th of July at 5:30, and there will be a guided foraging walk followed by a 7-course taster menu cooked in front of you over the fire. Tickets for this are £135, and if you're interested, email inquiries@islandhall.com for booking info.
Over to Congratulations Corner now, and many congratulations to both Scots All Day in Mill Road and Meadows of both Eltersley Avenue and Mill Road. It's 5 years since they started up, and since then they have both built a big, loyal and well-deserved following. So well done, and we're pleased that you're there. And Scots All Day has been nominated for the Good Food Guide UK's 100 Best Local Restaurants too.
Yeah, good for Scott. Congratulations also to the Cambridge Wine Academy, which has been named a finalist in the IWC Industry Awards, as has Cambridge Wine Merchants for its sparkling wines. Now, IWC stands for International Wine Challenge, by the way.
Congratulations also to Alex Rushmer of Van der Lyle for his recent appearance as a judge in MasterChef, but also for the superb piece of writing in his most recent Open Kitchen article, Homage to a Carrot, Homage to a Chef, which was a real pleasure to read, and it's worth signing up to Alex Rushmer's writings.
Some less welcome news is that Amphora in Devonshire Road is closing, at least temporarily. Chong Chong Bo hopes to find another site. The landlord has other plans for the building, apparently. In the meantime, there may be some wine and cheese events which will be hosted by Culinaris, so keep checking their website for information or keep listening to Flavour.
There's a new season of food talks at the British Library, which included, past tense, an appearance by Rosie Sykes earlier in the week. But the season is not finished yet. It runs into June and details are on the British Library website.
CoFarm has a very busy month of planting out seedlings, and if you'd like to volunteer to help, just go to cofarm.co and sign up.
Beginning on the 31st of May and happening every Friday after that for the next few months, you're going to be able to collect produce from Sweet Pea Market Garden in Caxton. More information on their website.
North Stow Tap and Social has gluten-free cakes every day, made by honest-to-goodness cakes.
Cafe Foy on Cambridge's Quayside has extended its opening hours. From Monday to Saturday, it opens at 10:30 a.m. and shuts at 9 p.m, while on Sunday, it's open from 10:30 till 7:30.
And the Cambridge Beer Festival is about to begin. It runs from the 20th to the 25th of May. You can pay on entry or get advance tickets, which will allow you to get in faster. Weekday sessions run from 12 till 3 and 5 till 10:30. Entry is free for the lunchtime sessions. On Saturday, it runs from noon until 10:30 at night, and the entry at any time is £4. Sorry, I drowned you out there, Alan.
OK, I was just going to say, how much cheese do you think they've ordered for the Cambridge Beer Festival? 800 kilograms.
800 kilograms?
800. Several pantechnicons full. Right, wine news.
Okay. Yeah, sorry.
On to wine news now. On the 21st and 22nd of May, there is sadly the last tastings to be held at Amphora, certainly in Devonshire Road, and they're tastings of Pinot Noir from Burgundy and beyond. And also on the 22nd of May, at the Cherry Hinton Road branch of Cambridge Wine Merchants, there's a Night Timber tasting with a selection of 6 wines to sample, including the highly regarded 1086 Prestige Cuvée. Tickets are £45.
Now, there's a quiz night at Cambridge Wine Merchants on Cherry Hinton Road with a mixture of general knowledge, wine and spirit questions, including a blind wine tasting round. That's on the 29th of May. It's £20 per team. Team is up to 4 people. And on the 31st of May, Cambridge Wine Merchants has a Torabeg Mossburn Masterclass. That's the new distillery on the Isle of Skye. It's £20. It'll be at their King's Parade branch. And there's also a cheese and wine tasting event being held at the Bridge Street branch of Cambridge Wine Merchants on the 4th of June. Tickets are available via the Eventbrite website.
And on the 13th of June, there's the Cambridge Wine Merchants Summer Wine Fair. That's going to be held at the Cambridge Rugby Club in Grantchester Road.
At the Wine Rooms in Hills Road on the 6th of June, there is a tasting of Syrah from around the world, including Rhone Valley, Italy and Australia. 13th of June, it's Southern Italian tasting. On the 20th of June, South American tasting.
And finally for this, on the 3rd of July, there's a rosé night at Finboy's on Mill Road. The evening will be hosted by Hal Wilson of Cambridge Wine Merchants with dishes matched to the various rosé wines, such as Sea of Tuna, Torched Cornish Mackerel, sounds fantastic, and Poached Halibut. Tickets for rosé night are £75 per person.
OK. Now, one of the things I love most about radio is the chance to present something a little different, something that moves, you know, perhaps at a different speed. We have the latest news and interviews, which have a certain briskness to them. But one of my favourite things on our programme is Alan's recordings with Dave Fox. I love the pace of them. And now that the weather has started to change for the better, we hope, I headed out to an allotment. There's 26 allotment sites in Cambridge, and at this one, I met a mother and son team.
The dawn chorus. It starts around 3:30-ish in the morning. You probably hear it if you sleep with your windows open, which is warranted as it's certainly warming up these days. In a few hours' time, enthusiastic gardeners will be heading down the allotments to make a start on their plots. And at Rock Road Allotments, I met with Sherry Weatherly and her son Robert.
I've got some spinach down there and also got parsnips. Parsnips.
Oh, lovely.
Take their time. I don't expect them until Christmas time.
Mm.
And the smell of it is wonderful. There's nothing like homegrown, nothing like it.
Allotments mean a lot.
The minute I walk through those gates, I feel a sort of peace come over me, even though I know there's probably quite a bit of work to do. It's a great therapy, actually, and it's so rewarding when you see, like, the first seeds that came up, that spurs you on to get home quickly and get those run of beans in, etc. The mid-late 70s, we have always had an allotment. Now we're in a flat. We're very glad to have this one, which we've had for 12 years now.
So how long have you been coming to the allotment?
Well, since I moved to Cambridge in 2000. But one of the great things about the allotment was that I'd get home from work and there'd be some produce, not just on the front doorstep, but sometimes in the sink, harvested by my mum. It goes back a long way. It's something that I'd like to pass down to my daughters when they get older. I suspect they will inevitably move this way. But I think it's also wanting to be close to parents and to inherit what they've done, to continue that lineage and that family tree.
On the balcony on my flat, I've got one of these plastic greenhouses and I've got corn on the cob and runner beans and leeks in there, but they're only just peeping through. They won't be able to go in the ground for another 3 weeks. Everything's going to be slow because, you know, it rained the whole of February and this whole lot was flooded. It looked a bit like the trenches.
Oh.
I've lost 3 tomatoes this year. It was so cold. This warm weather only really started like 10 days ago, didn't it?
Mm.
It's not going to last, but the general air should be warmed up and the earth, because when I was digging, even last week, I felt how wet and cold the earth still was.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy for this time of the year, but that's the way the seasons are all changing. We just hope we might get a lovely Indian summer.
Pests.
What we have here is those beautiful, wretched roe deer. They come along and pinch the corn on the cob. And not only that, they leave all the rubbish strewn along the path. They don't even tidy up after they're... And I know, because my daughter-in-law and my son love corn on the cob, and I said, I'm sorry, but they've been pinched. And Robert's face, and then I said, by the roe deer. And so he said, oh, that's all right then. So it's very kind.
Slugs and snails.
And yeah. Now there'll be even more, because they love the warm nights.
Yes, he kind of describing them as all popping up in the evening.
Yeah, that's it. That's when they come out to play. I don't know what the answer is. I use all the year, I collect eggshells.
Oh, are you an eggshell believer as well?
Yes.
I heard that years ago. Broken up eggshells, and it's almost like...
like gravel.
Yes, glass.
They don't like... Yeah, it's like glass. They don't like climbing over it, but... That's what I use.
Yeah. And terrible for composting, aren't they?
Yes.
Eggshells and avocado shells.
Yes.
Get it? They won't compost. They stick around.
Then you should save them for me.
I think you struck gold there.
What's this? Is it a prehistoric brick, you think? Anglo-Saxon antiquity.
It's amazing how it's drying up again. When Robert was a baby, we had the hottest days possible.
Wasn't that the when we had the massive drought in the early
70s? 1976. Yes. Concorde.
Yes. Yeah.
The year the Concorde flew over our house. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Very parched. Yes. Wimbledon was parched. Absolutely. Manchester United lost the FA Cup to Southampton.
And one wondered whether the grass was ever going to grow because it was all brown and dead. But
now it seems
and we
to
expected
be
it to be like that every other year. But like these few days, we're taking it for granted. And on my balcony, I've got a lounger chair and chairs are sitting out. I'm not even bothering to take the cushions off at night. I'm pushing my luck, I think.
These days, you can find water butts up and down the allotment. But that wasn't true 50-odd years ago.
It was difficult. And there wasn't any water down here. And I used to come down with the pram with bottles of water, where you can water things.
So everybody has a steady supply?
Everybody can have water, yeah. Mm. It made a lot of difference.
We're going to grow potatoes, asparagus and radishes. I suspect there'll be some purple sprouting broccoli at some point soon. And onions are always a winner. And what I'm digging up here is going to either be runner beans or sweet corn. Likewise, courgettes, I think, are really nice.
Oh, courgettes.
Straight off the allotment. They still need a bit of salting, don't they, Mum, I think, courgettes? Fry them in a bit of salt to make them tasty?
I think so, yes.
Yeah. And tomatoes, of course, in the polytunnel. They're always a win. But aren't they meant to be planted on FA Cup Day, Mum? Tomatoes.
Around the edges of the allotments, there's plenty of trees and bushes yielding food to be picked. We recorded under a tree to stay out of the heat. The low-hanging branches were bristling with one of my dad's favourite fruits.
Last year was not good for greengages, but you can see the little ones coming. I think that, you know, everyone needs a rest, but I know sometimes they're on the ground, they're falling off. So you have to really should be wearing a crash helmet.
Did you ever do things like making greengage jelly?
I don't, but I know lots of people up here do, and they often give me some lovely blackcurrant. I've got blackcurrant bushes there, but I'm not very patient with jam making, so I rely on the kind people up here to give me a jar now and then.
Slow gin?
Oh, yes, we used to make slow gin. We used to go, when the children were young, we used to go walking along the lanes and picking the sloes and taking them home and pricking them and putting them in the bottom of a jar and then putting the same amount of sugar with them and then filling up with gin. And you're supposed to leave them for a good 6 months to a year. But my husband used to be sampling them after about 6 weeks. They had sampled some from a friend who was 6 years old and he said it was beautiful.
Oh, wow.
I've made some since we've been here. We found sloes out at Maddingley Way. It has been consumed. It's something very different.
When my colleague joined the programme, one of the first things he introduced us to was nettle tea.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah?
If you pick nettles and put them into water and keep the lid on them, they make fantastic liquid feeder. But you've got to keep the lid on it and tolerate the smell when you take the lid off. Actually, you've reminded me, perhaps I should go, but I've got to get a bucket with a tight lid, haven't I?
The nettles have to be young nettles. They can't be the old ones. They need to be quite young nettles.
Then start making some after you finish doing that. But I've got my strawberries coming up. I've got over there potatoes in. And even then, when I was putting them in, I thought, it's too wet. But I see lots of people put theirs in before, and theirs are already up, so perhaps I could have been more daring. But and as I say, I've got some spring cabbage. They won't come in the spring, they'll come later, but it'll all be all right. The thing is, it's here for my pleasure. I'm not here, particularly when my son's here doing all the donkey work for me. It's a great pleasure.
Of course, what my mum does as well is she rotates the crops.
Runner beans, corn on the cob, but we alternate where we grow them. You've got to do that.
Sometimes you'll let a plot do nothing for the summer so it can regenerate and be ready for the following year.
Cabbage and Brussels sprouts, that sort of thing, the borecus.
I think the saying is you get from the land what you put into it.
I did once have asparagus growing very well, but that takes ages to get started. Ah. 3 years later, it was great. If you're patient, these pieces of ground do grow very good asparagus. It's just a case of finding what suits the earth. This earth is very clay. Mm. And of course, if you put compost, you'll get out of the ground what you put into the ground. You've got to feed it.
The extent to which the frost impedes into March or April can be critical to the success of a crop in the summer.
Yes. When you say the soil is very clay-like...
It's like stone. Think what clay does. Mm. As you can see, the knobs there are very hard to break down. And that means drainage is not so good. Mm. But there's a way around everything.
A young couple that had taken on an abandoned plot several patches away had found their way around the soil situation too.
It's very heavy clay soil in this plot, but there's a lot of stuff that I've picked up from Water Beach. There's the waste management where all the green waste goes and you get free compost there. So just carloads of compost go on top and then whatever can grow in that, really.
Yeah, things like?
Potatoes, tomatoes, squashes, beets, spinach, maybe French beans, but a lot of them have been pecked by birds or eaten by slugs and snails. And then onions, leeks, rhubarb, carrots. It should be good for everything. It's just what you can protect. Yeah.
So it's a way of life, and it's just great to be here and to meet up with one's allotment friends.
Yes, yeah. It's been lovely to meet you, Sherry.
Thank you, and you.
Here we are at Rock Road Allotments. And thanks to you and to Robert.
Yeah, thank you.
And you're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105 Radio.
There we go. I quite like some of the tricks I picked up from that recording. Boiling nettles to make liquid fertiliser and broken eggshells to deter slugs. And if any of that makes you want to consider an allotment of your own, then do check out allotments.net, which will give you a complete list of allotments in Cambridge with full contact details. And, appropriately enough, allotments.net is a website run by Dave Fox. Who better?
Indeed. And this nettle tea has developed really nicely, hasn't it?
So nice.
It's not just good for boiling to make liquid fertiliser. You can drink it too.
And there's the music signalling time for news from social media.
Culinaris has some Indian wild asparagus in store. Rosie Sykes, who's getting her, I think, fourth mention on today's programme, is going to be at the Canteen Southwold at the Old Hospital doing some free holiday workshops on the 28th and the 30th of May, how to make your own butter, jam and scones from scratch. And tickets are on the Old Hospital website. The Maypole Pub in Cambridge has its beer festival from the 20th to the 25th of May, when it will be open all day. That's with local real ales and the best craft beers. And that's the late news on Cambridge 105 Radio.
And there's Booker T and the MGs with Green Onions, taking us into our jobs section. Cambridge Sustainable Food is wanting to hire a volunteer and project support coordinator. The deadline for this is the 20th of May. And if that interests you, then email them your CV and covering letter to lara@cambridgesustainablefood.org.
Harvey's Coffee House off West Road is looking for part-time and full-time employees. For more information, email mike@manager@harveyscoffeehouse.co.uk.
The Food Museum in Stowmarket has a vacancy for a marketing and communications assistant. The closing date for that is the 17th of May.
Ed's Easy Diner in the Grand Arcade is looking for a grill chef, and a pizza chef is needed at Cambridge Country Club at Bourne.
Pint Shop has a vacancy for a senior sous chef and vacancies for chefs at all levels.
Kwai Mill Hotel has vacancies for a sous chef and also a chef de partie.
Chefs de partie are also needed at Hotel Duvan, Market House in Cambridge, Midsummer House, The Orator, Tivoli, Maddingley Hall, and Pembroke College. And there is a part-time vacancy also at Downing College.
And finally, a commis chef is needed at... Oh, actually, not finally. The commis chef is needed at Cambridge Union Society. And a late one, Provenance Kitchen is looking for a full-time kitchen porter, 45 hours a week. Phone Cambridge 839993 or email kate@provenancekitchen.com for details.
All of which brings us to the end of today's programme. We are here on alternate Saturdays at 12 noon and repeated on Mondays at 6 p.m. and Thursdays at 2 p.m. And we're also available as a podcast from all the usual places. Coming up next on Cambridge 105 Radio today is Strummers and Dreamers.
But that's all from us for today. And we'll be back on the 15th of June with lots more food and drink news, jobs and features. But we won't be here on the 1st of June because of Cambridge 105 Radio's coverage of Strawberry Fair. So until the 15th of June, goodbye.
Goodbye. And I'll just finish off this little Tina.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm not the type to say one thing and do another. And if it's all right, I'd kinda like to be your lover. 'Cause when you're with me, I can't help but be so desperately, uncontrollably happy. And hey, I'm not the type.